as happy it's Friday. I certainly am. It's been one of those weeks, one of those days, one of those whatever you want to call it. It's been interesting. Right? It's been interesting. Mr. Lampshade said, any chance I'll share the name of this song? No. It's by a band called Four. It's called Fearless. It's pretty sick, right? I like it. Kind of tell it, like, I swear the song is saying my emotions right now. Like, the way I feel about the industry. It's like, oh, you can do it. Builds up and then it gets sad again. But it's kind of how the industry is right now. Let me turn that off. Anyway, so my name is Steve. This show is called Freight Broker Live. It is the one and only talk show run by an active freight broker that I know of. I don't think there's another one out there. Actually, I know there isn't. For anyone who doesn't know, my name is, I already said that, it's Steve. I started Freight Broker Live back in August. I didn't start Freight Broker Live to be a media guy. I didn't start to be a journalist. I didn't start to do anything other than to get out there and say about the trucking industry. That's the best way to say it. But that's what it was for. Ah, my headphones are being stupid. But that's the reason why I made the... Hold on, I'm going to screw up my stuff here, but whatever. I think my headphones are going. Luckily, I ordered a whole new set. New headphones, new mic, new everything. I ordered it, should be here in the next couple of days, hopefully. Anyway, so my name is Steve Oatley. I am an active freight broker. I'm an agent for one of the nation's largest and most trusted freight brokerages. I don't say who it is in this show. But anyway, I'm going to talk about some stuff today. As I mentioned in the title and the description, I've got some layoffs. I've got some cuts. I've got some. So I'm going to try something new. I'm not going to say who it is. I'm not going to give a region of who it is. I'm not even going to say, I'll say it's a carrier, it's a trucking company, or it's a broker. But I don't want to highlight negative stuff all the time in the industry. It seems like that's all we ever do. And in a time where the future, to me at least, is very uncertain, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I want to be, you know, more honest with my reporting and try to be not honest isn't the right word because everything I write is honest. I just want to write about stuff that I care about. Anyway, so let's go through some news first and then we'll just start the general conversation. So I read the chat. So everyone that is just watching this for the first time, you're welcome to type into YouTube. If you're watching this on Facebook, please, I don't read your chats unless you share it out to 3 or 4 groups. That's not true, but go ahead and share it out to as many people. You can type what you want in chat. There's also a call-in line. You see it on the monitor here. It's not really on the monitor, see, but it looks like it is. Technology. But you can call in. My call-in screen's on a different screen. I do this all myself, so you're going to have to just wait until I switch over and see it, and then I will pick up the call. As you guys can see, we have the coronavirus count, 265,506 confirmed cases here in the United States. Again, these are either presumptive positive tests or confirmed cases here in the United States. 6,786 deaths and 11,963 people recovered. That number, as you guys all know, is well over a million for the country or for the world. It's just sad. It's just sad. And who knows how bad it's going to be. And like I said in my show a couple of days ago, I care about logistics. I care about the industry. I care about what we're going through right now in the field. I don't necessarily want to focus on deaths and this. I care about what's going to happen to trucking, what we have to look forward to, if anything. I mean, and so I'm going to kind of analyze that from my perspective. And I'll get into that in a minute. So we have more stay-at-home orders. I think we're up to 40. If you guys go to my website, the very first article that's going to show up on the main page is the updated list of states with stay-at-home orders. There's every state. I think it's 89% of the United States population is under some sort of restriction right now. I'm still scrolling, and these are all the states. So it is insane that this many states have shut down. But the thing you got to realize is it's not just these it's not just people that are being confined to their houses, which, by the way, my wife is on the other side of that wall talking to her students. My son is on the other side of the wall right there having a parent-teacher conference with her kids, his teacher. It's hard. It's hard. Me, I'm used to working from home. I do everything from home. But those guys are having a hard time. My wife is having a hard time because the teachers or the students aren't being engaging. My son is having a hard time because he's 9 years old, so he's bored out of his mind and he can't do anything and he can't see his friends. And he's you could see, like we could see with his mannerisms, he's starting to lose it. You know, he's starting to snap, and there's nothing we can do though, because we're all stuck. You know, we're all stuck here. We're all stuck at home. You know, I have the privilege as a freight broker to work from home all the time if I needed to. A lot of other brokerages are facing or have faced that. We know with the fact that TQL apparently allegedly laid off 700 people because their systems weren't capable of handling that many remote employees on their servers. They dispute that. I don't care. It's correct, allegedly. I'll just say that to protect myself. But there's another company today, another major broker that they're being forced to cut people, and they're not cutting people because I don't know. To my understanding, they're not forced to cut people because they can't handle these people working from home. They're forced to cut people because the freight volumes are down. And so this is a company, and this, I don't even think their employees have been told yet. So I'm certainly not going to say the company name on the air. But it's a well-known company, and they're laying off a massive percentage, you know, over 10% of their employees right now. And you guys will see it later. There's going to be a bunch of people that jump on the bandwagon and put it's just silly. There's going to be a whole pile of people that are going to be like, oh my God, this company laid off all their employees, blah, blah, blah. And those are the very same companies that don't want anyone to know when they're laid off. But I'm just as guilty as doing that myself. I've written about layoffs. I've written about closures. I had a conversation with a VP of a major trucking company this morning to verify some information that I heard. And I said, hey, listen, I heard you have dramatic pay cuts and this and mileage reduction for your over-the-road drivers and reduced hours for your local drivers and all this stuff. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, are you going to print it? And I said, no. And I said, I just wanted to talk to you and confirm it for myself to see if it was true. But then I also want to just tell you, man to man, as someone that loves the industry, what you guys are doing and the way that you are choosing to, instead of lay off people because there was no other, they're cutting hours, they're cutting salaries, they're doing whatever they can to keep those people employed and keep money flowing to those families. We all know freight's down. We all know there's a drastic decrease in the amount of freight that's out there right now. Everybody knows that. Everybody does. There's not a single person right now that isn't going to be, if you're not suffering now and you're doing all right, like my brokerage side, we're doing okay. We're moving freight. You know, somehow my customers are open. Monday, I start with the Book It Now functionality on the DAT load board. So we're going to see how that works and hope that works well. But there's other brokers out there, especially produce brokers and those types of people that are really not doing well. You know, one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to play this video here, and it's going to start playing right away, I think. So bear with me. I'll fix the sound.
But, guys, Shay with the Y.
All right. So there's this video that I saw on LinkedIn yesterday, and I'm going to put this on the screen here in a second. This guy he owns an onion factory. His name is Shay. He owns an onion farm and onion businesses and distributing. So I want you guys to listen. It's a 2-minute video. It's very good because it sheds a different light on it. It's not just trucking. It's not, I mean, you guys, some of you may not even be feeling the hardship that is coming with trucking. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, but listen to what's going on with these guys, because I know a watermelon farmer that has a bunch of plants, according to a broker that I talked to, where they have 160 totes of watermelons sitting on the dock and they can't do anything with because nobody's buying them. Listen to this video, because this is going to blow your mind.
Guys, Shay with the Waihi. I want to show you something. We're packing today, and we have been. But most of what we're packing, like you saw in my other video the other day, is all consumer packs. I need to show you a problem. I don't know how to address the problem. I don't know how the industry can address the problem. I don't know how the country can address the problem. But see that? That's a semi-load. That's a semi-load. That's a semi-load. That's another semi-load. There's a half a semi-load back there. Here's another one. Here's another one. What's going on? Well, we can't sell our main size profile of onions. Consumers, those of you that are out there, don't generally consume an onion that's that big. That's a large jumbo that has been packaged and would normally go to restaurants. Well, guys, the restaurants aren't consuming anything, which means we have millions of pounds of unusable, perishable products, just like the guys in the flour industry, and there's nowhere for it to go. We could offer it at a discount. You could take it home, but how do we get that discount to you? How do we get that discount to you, the consumer? And even if we did, would you want them? I don't know. I just wanted to show you one of the ramifications of COVID-19. If I make a widget in a factory, I can shut down the factory. Now, I've got to pay payroll, and I've got overhead in that factory, but at least I can shut it down. I'm running all day long. I'm paying the payroll, making the product, and leaving it there. And now I'm not even making the product. I'm putting it in bins, putting it back in storage, and I'm probably going to throw it away. The ramifications of this disease are massive. They're massive for all of us, and I don't know that everybody realizes how significant they are, because if you're working from home, you're working from home. If you're making, again, that solid widget that can be put in storage or production can be stopped, no big deal. For those of us in agriculture and food service, we've grown the crop. We've paid for the crop. Now we don't get to sell the crop. Catch you later.
That video yesterday got me. I saw it on LinkedIn, like I said. Hold on, you guys may hear it play again. Bear with me 1 second. It's sad. It's sad because we don't even pay attention to that. Some of you reefer guys may see that. Some of you produce brokers are already seeing that right now. Because like I said, there's people that, you know, nobody's buying watermelon. So all this watermelon is literally just sitting there. Then you have produce according to the border being shut down and migrant workers not being able to come in as frequently as they were before. You got produce that's literally rotting in. It's just, it's sad. And it's something that it's not. It's happening quite a bit. You get people like this that put the video out, which is great, but not enough people know about what really is happening to the industry, because companies like that, are they going to be able to recover? Hopefully, you know, but it's scary, you know, and that directly relates to the trucking industry because of freight and because of the produce and the reefer market and all that stuff. I'll be honest, guys, I'm petrified of what's going on. Like when I was talking to a C-level person this morning about the freight brokerage who's laying people off, he's like, listen, why don't you talk about, you know, what we're doing? Yes, we have to lay off people, but why don't you put a spin on it of saying like some of the steps we're doing to help those employees? Like, why don't you say that? And I'm like, well, or even better, he's like, why don't you highlight that now we have a huge amount of talent that is very good at their job that is just unemployed and will be entering the marketplace when this whole thing is done? He's like, why don't you just write about like what we're going to do and what kind of position we'll be in when this thing is done and what the industry will look like? And I gave him the real honest response. I have no effing clue. I don't know when this is going to be done. Nobody does. I don't know what freight's going to be like when this is done. I don't. I mean, who does? How many companies are going to be forced to close? I have an article that was put out today by Furniture Today. It's a magazine that deals with furniture and stuff like that. In transportation, just the furniture market in general. Now, me, I have a background in doing white glove delivery stuff. That's what a segment of my trucking company that I owned. We used to handle all the white glove deliveries in the Northeast. These trucking companies used to deliver freight to my warehouses. These guys, and you can see the article here, several specialized furniture carriers are suspending less than truckload service to retailers as COVID-19 continues to spread. And it's basically talking about, because no, if you guys don't know about furniture, it's all made in like Hickory or High Point, North Carolina. It's all made down there. The governor shut down all non-essential businesses. Furniture is not an essential business. So all these plants have closed down. These trucking companies, big trucking companies, Shelba Trucking or Shelba Johnson, Wiseway Transportation Services, Furniture Brooks DeHart Furniture Express. There's all these companies, Mississippi Furniture Express, they've all suspended LTL deliveries. One, because they're some of them are still making pickups, but they're not making deliveries because they don't want their drivers going into hotspots. Like one of the companies has basically said he's not, they stopped all deliveries, even in places that aren't under restriction. They stopped all deliveries to like Florida, to certain states, which are considered hotspots of this virus. Why? Not because the places that he would be delivering to aren't open. It's because they didn't, these truck drivers or these trucking company owners did not want to put their drivers at risk. Go into a hotspot, offload this stuff. Because if you don't know, you're very hands-on offloading furniture. It's not like, you know, a couple of pallets and a forklift. You do it all one by one. That guy, that video was posted on LinkedIn. Kevin Wright, the guy's name is Shay Myers. And he asked people to share it out. So I don't know how to share it out other than it being on LinkedIn. But he wants people to see it. He wants people to understand that kind of stuff is going on. And it's crazy. And I'll play that video again in closing today because that video is very strong. It tells what's going on. And, you know, as he said in the caption, the loss of the food service sector likely means we're going to dump millions upon millions of pounds of produce here in the United States. And now we already know they're doing that with the milk up in Wisconsin. They're just emptying their tankers right into the farm because nobody's buying surplus milk. All this milk used to go to distribution centers. It used to go to schools. It used to go to all these places. It's not anymore. Nobody's stockpiling that shit. We're all stockpiling toilet paper for whatever reason. But he said, compound this with all the strengths of the U.S. dollar and the Mexican peso, and then you see why millions and millions of pounds of Mexican produce are being dumped on our side of the border. It gets, you know, little whatever. The dumping makes the situation even worse, and then it goes on with the captions. But that video is very important, you know. And like I said, that guy, he has onions here. I don't know what the company is, but you should look at that. Osman, what's up, buddy? But yeah, it's just sad when you actually think about what's going on in different sectors of the market. You have the furniture market shutting down. It's going to affect all those furniture retailers. Who's going out to buy a nice sofa right now? Well, maybe some of you are because you're stuck in your house all the time. But it really, the whole thing is worrisome. And when I had the executive with this company and he's like, why do you write about, like, you know, the good things that are going to happen? And I'm like, I have no idea what's going to be good. How long is this going to last? Shit, we could get another couple of weeks and then the press conference that I broadcast every day at 5:00. They may say, listen, we got a lockdown for another 30 days. You don't know. Nobody knows what's going on. You know, a lot of trucking companies are going to, they're already suffering. I mean, one LTL carrier said an internal email, and I'm not saying who it is because I don't want to blow them up. And I had a long conversation with an executive with that company this morning. He said in the past 2 weeks, they have a 33% rejection or a 33% reduction in freight revenue. Because nobody is shipping stuff. This is a 33% reduction in freight revenue for a major employer. And this isn't a small company. This is they have over 1,000 trucks. This is a massive, massive company. It's insane. It's concerning to me because I don't know what the end game is. Like, I don't know. Think about our kids. Like, my wife is like, geez, none of these students actually are doing anything. She has to keep a separate attendance for all the kids who are not doing the assignments. She showed me it. She's got like 160 students in her that take her class. She had like 3 pages of students that are just not doing any assignments. What can we do as parents? We have to force them to do stuff, but I don't know. Kevin Donnelly said, I got something for you. Customer just asked me to do a reefer load in I'm a Loki to Asheville, North Carolina for $1,200. I don't know where I'm a Loki is, so that doesn't help. But, I mean, rates are down. You guys see the Freight Waves reports. They put them out every day. If you can decipher through all the financial stuff, they're pretty good. I have the article out today from DAT that talks about what they're forecasting. And this is a thing. You can only forecast what's going to happen in the next couple of days. Everyone asks, like I said yesterday, they just said it on their show that airs right before this. They said, people were like, when's a freight cliff going to happen? When's it going to happen? Well, it's happened. They're saying, you know, across the board right now, it's not 60% of businesses are open. 60% of businesses are closed. 60% of the freight in the United States is not shipping. And yes, everyone's still riding the loads from they picked up a day or two ago, but I don't know. I know myself, my freight is notoriously cheap. The big customer I work for, it's cheap, it's partials, it's good. I know with 100% certainty that next week will probably be my biggest volume week that I've ever had. Why? Because people are going to have to take those loads. Now, there's not a difference in price, meaning that the customer is always cheap and it's just good freight and I move 10 of them and I'll make $500 total for 10 loads because I'm a volume guy, $50 per load usually. But I know next week there's going to be a hint of desperation as more and more drivers are out there and the freight is dried up and people are going to be like, shit, what do we do? So I know next week will probably be one of my busiest weeks, you know? And what I told my customer today is I said, listen, I may move all these at cost. He's like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, I'll put my profit on and then try to offer it to the carriers or make, you know, make, instead of making $50, pay the carrier $25 extra and make $25 or even less. I don't even care, you know, but that's the thing is there's going to be a lot, you know, brokers next week will be busy because there's going to be a tremendous amount of capacity. The shippers that are open are going to realize, hey, we have that power right now to set rates. And the thing is, it's going to take them a long time to collect their money, too. I worry about it from a financial standpoint as well. What happens to these companies when money is drying up? Yes, you still need to order product, but what happens when people are ordering product to manufacture an item, but the item isn't selling because nobody's buying because everyone's watching their money? What happens to us as service providers that are usually on net 30 terms? What happens to us as service providers that move loads 2 weeks ago before this got all crazy and we're expecting a payment in 2 weeks, but the company hasn't been able to sell anything or they're not getting paid on time? What happens? You know, it's a little concerning. And I'm not trying to freak everybody out, but I got a caller. Let me pick this guy up. What's up? You're on the air.
Okay. So I was thinking that because of this coronavirus panic that eventually, and within about another month or two, if it continues, the truckers are going to be the new heroes of America, like the cops were back during 9/11, as long as the supply lines are open. So you're a freight broker. I don't know how, no, I know hardly anything about that particular industry, but I'm presuming from what I've heard from you the last 2 minutes, that the supply lines are open and that companies are getting their particular merchandise. Is that right?
Well, it depends. It's pretty much only essential goods right now that are moving.
That's okay. And as long as something's moving and if they're essential goods, just as long as the government doesn't change the definition of essential and make essential goods non-essential, and then we're going to go down the rabbit hole. Right now, what people are suffering is a lot of inconvenience. We can't go to work. We're home with our spouses and kids. But as long as we have electricity, food, water, sewage, then all we have is just, you know, and as long as the government does pay out those payments for accentuated salaries as a result of the relief bill, then we can come through this, because at the end, if as long as it doesn't take too long, as long as people have money, then the economy can start back up again, and people will spend that money on the goods that aren't being, that they are not spending it on now. So hopefully, if it's over in 2 months, the economy won't crash. But if it goes longer than that, then I'm afraid the government's going to shut down just about everything. And then people are going to be in for a hell of a ride.
Right. I mean, I think the economy is crashing. It's we're well on our way there, you know, as more freight volumes. Because here's the thing. I think you missed the point. All right. We do have essential goods shipping now, and we have non-essential goods too that are still shipping because the trucking industry is essential. I'm getting feedback, so I'm going to hang up. Thanks for calling, but I'll answer your question on the live feed. Essential goods are shipping, and we know that, and non-essential goods are shipping too, but especially raw products and things like that. That is all shipping. But the issue that we have is that eventually the people that are out there panic buying everything up, you know, we still can't get toilet paper here. It's all over the place. And people are just buying everything. The problem is that when people start panicking, because a little $1,200 stimulus check or whatever isn't going to help people survive continuously. All the trucking companies now that are finally feeling the crunch, as we saw with the Keep Trucking layoffs, when they announced their layoffs, they did it preemptively, knowing that they're going to see a downturn in the freight industry. That's why they laid off people. They saw a huge reduction of vehicle traffic in the Northeast and Southern California and 12% across the board, meaning that truckers are already not driving. You know, you guys get the, we have a, only a very small percentage of the nation's trucks, clearly, that watch this show or that interact on social media. If a software provider that licenses, I don't know how many trucks they have, 50,000 trucks or however many they see, if they look at the analytics and they say, okay, we have too many trucks sitting before the country even really went into a big lockdown, we have such a huge portion of trucks sitting. They said, all right, we know that there's going to be a reduction in freight volume. Therefore, we know that we don't need to carry a big sales force. Therefore, we're going to lay them off. And that was the most telling sign for me up to this point, because you can't guess on rates. Everyone could say, yeah, rates are going to do this. They're going to come up, and they were up last week, and then they're going to come down. And so you can guess that, but where the time frame is and when this is all going to last, it's all variable, meaning nobody knows. It's too fluid. Everything could change every single day. You know, tomorrow they could be like, oh, well, we have a vaccine for coronavirus and it cures you in 24 hours and we're going to just run around to everyone's house and give you a little shot. You never know what they're going to do. Not that that's ever going to happen, but it's concerning to me, because as someone that truly loves the industry, I'm not worried about my job. Let's get that straight. I have enough money to provide for my family for a year without working if I needed to. I'm not super worried about my job. My issue is the industry in general, because I love the industry and I want my kids to work in it. And I want you guys to continue to love it and work in it, or hate it, but still work in it because you know it's awesome. You know, that's the thing about trucking. And trucking isn't just driving a truck. Trucking is being a broker, being a carrier, doing all that stuff. That is the thing about it. It's awesome. When the last caller who said, what the hell did he say? He said that truckers will be seen as heroes like cops were after 9/11. Truckers already are. If you look at what's been going on in the media, we as media have done a really good job on highlighting trucking companies and highlighting these drivers. This weekend, I told my wife, I've got a little credential thing that says I can go out even though we're under strict lockdown here in Florida, because I'm technically media. So I'm going to go out to the truck stops, hopefully this weekend, and try to get some camera footage from 6 foot away from drivers and just talk about what they feel. Are they seeing appreciation? I'm going to go into the truck stop and see if it's open, how they're getting food and all that kind of stuff, because I think it would be good content and to show something that's relevant. Truck drivers really are the backbone of America. Nobody can dispute that. Do you need like services and shit to help you get your job done? Absolutely. But they are. They're already the hero. The problem that I have is, look at the publicity. Look, there's local news stations every single day that are highlighting trucking right now and saying, these are the people that are supporting us. These are the people that are getting everything done, which is awesome. But as soon as this is done, it's not going to matter. People still get mad, you know, and say, well, you know, a truck was supposed to bring stuff, but it never showed up. You know, it's going to happen where it's going to turn. Is if there is a way to show and to highlight the good throughout the process and after, that's why I'm not going to report on these layoffs. That's why I'm not going to report on on, you know, a trucking company have to cut executive salaries and mileage for you know, employees and drivers. Because what good does that do the industry? How is that helping you guys to deal with your the coping of what is going to happen, whatever the hell it is? Because nobody really knows. You know, I don't know. Osman said, but bro, go buy a drone cam. I actually have one and it's broke. And every time I go to fix it, I end up crashing it right away. Like literally, I fly it up and it crashes blades and breaks them and all that stuff. I'm not very good at it. I got to buy one of those expensive ones that kind of, you know, you just press a button and the thing goes flying by itself someday. But I don't make a bunch of money doing these videos or anything. Someday I will, hopefully, but the whole thing is just scary to me, it makes me worried about what's going to happen, because it's who knows. I mean, who really knows what's going to happen? Yeah, rates are going to go down. I think fuel costs is leveling out, so fuel is the oil price. I didn't even see what it was today. If someone knows what the oil or price for oil, if it went up today. I know the Dow is down 477 points as of right now. 471 points as of 2:32 p.m. but it's just crazy. The whole thing is insane. Persmall, you can send me a message afterwards. It's a little nutty, you know? It makes me worried about the industry. It makes me worried about what the future of it is. Are we going to rebound? Absolutely. So don't think I'm being like, oh my God, we're all doomed. The world's going to end. Because I'm not saying that. Is trucking going to rebound and be able to come back stronger than ever? Yeah, of course we are. That's what we are. That's what we do. That's, you know, called being a trucker, but, you know, whatever. Being involved in the trucking industry. We're strong and we're strong-willed and all that stuff. But damn, right now, it's... You know, I'm a little nervous. I'm nervous about the short term. I'm nervous about what is going to happen for the next month. When rates come back up, when this thing is done and rates come back up and people start buying shit again and people, you know, all the factories start pumping out crap again, trucking's going to be good. And I think that that's the time where everyone has a real chance at resetting the rates. Because and I don't know if this works because I don't do the RFPs and stuff like this, but I'd be curious for a big broker that does these RFPs and stuff for the big shippers. If I've got one watch and call in, the call in line's fully anonymous, but I'm curious to see if this incident here will invalidate some of these RFPs and these rate contracts that some of these brokers and carriers alike have in place. And why do I say that? Well, because everything is resetting. So the cost, what it cost, you know, last month to buy a truck is not what it's going to cost in 2 months, because inevitably we're going to lose trucks. We're going to lose brokers. Brokers are going to end up having to close because they're not going to be able to keep going. There's going to be all sorts of weird stuff. And it makes me, I'm curious to find out what that means for our RFP type freight. You know, what if you're in a contracted rate for a year, what if there's... something that's never happened before. What does that mean for the contract? Do you have to abide by rates if for some reason the cost to purchase a truck is like three bucks per mile, but you're locked into a dollar? I don't know. It's interesting to see. If anyone has any insight on that, anyone that has an RFP contract or a contract in place like that with a dedicated route, I'd be really curious to hear what you're doing. And what you're planning, and what, or especially if there's a shipper watching, or you feel free to comment or send me an email or anything if you want to be fully anonymous. Ben Rambler on Facebook said, "Hi, Freight Broker. I have a question for you. I'm a relatively new driver, and you don't mind me asking, has freight really slowed that far down that company dispatchers are having problems finding freight for their drivers?" Yeah, did you watch the show? Yeah. Freight is slowed down. I mean, we're working at a 40% load value. That's what we normally have because everything is closing. If you're a company driver, then that's good. You know, if you're an owner operator, this is where, like I say, you guys should probably head towards home, work in your home regions. So that way, if something happens, you're not stranded out with 90 cent a mile freight in Oregon or something. We've seen, I got all those screenshots and all those loads out of Washington State last week. that we're paying like $1.10 a mile for reefer. I mean, yeah, freight. I don't know. Rates are going to continuously go down. Like I said, next week for me being a broker will probably be a good week because the rates for the first time ever will become comparable to the freight I have. Do you know what I mean? Because the freight I have is typically a little bit on the cheaper side. Scotty B. White said, so I listened to a comment from you yesterday that really bugs me. You said you had a carrier quote you a number to haul something that left a large margin for you. So you went back to the shipper and gave the margin back to the shipper. While I agree it's a noble, I don't understand. Since carriers have been on the ropes all year with many of them going broke, why would you not give the margin back to the carrier? Because why would I? My job, here's the thing. If I post a load, for anyone who doesn't know, yesterday, I booked a load yesterday morning. I quoted my customer $2,000. I told him I was going to make 10%, $2,200. I posted the load out. I had a carrier call, very hot lane, Texas. It was one pallet, was not a full truckload. One pallet, and I quoted my customer full truckload money on it. One pallet. My phones blew up instantly. First guy that called, I told him all the information about a load, told him it was partial, told him all the information about it. And then I said, what do you need? He said $1,400. I said, sold. I called my broker. I called my customer back and I said, hey, listen, I've got someone to move something for less money. Or I found someone to move it for $1,400. I'm going to make $100 on it. Does that make sense? Scotty B, why don't you call in, bud? I don't like the call in. Phone number's active, 914-803-4008. Don't be afraid. But to me, I show the discount to the customer because I've gotten the customer in the past. If a carrier tells me how much they want for the truck, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to make all that profit. I'll give it back to my customer because then when I need it because I misquote something or I did something, the customer is going to be more willing to act on it. So if he called me today and said, hey, I need a load picked up. And I said, okay, I'll get it moved for $2,000. And then the only rate I got on it was $2,200. I could call him and be like, hey, remember that last load that I overquoted and gave you the money back? I need to change this quote. It's sales. That's the difference between being a carrier and a broker. I have to do sales. As a carrier, you don't unless you have your own customers. Here we have a caller. Maybe it's Scotty. What's up?
Hey, how you doing? It is Scotty.
Oh, there he is.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing that I'm wondering about. You know, I've been in this business for a long, long time and operate as a carrier and a broker.
Yeah.
So we're asset-based, but we also do brokerage. We use it as a growth engine. But the thing is that my favorite kind of customers or brokers or carriers are ones that work back and forth. Right. So when there's a little bit of extra not in there, you spread it around. And even though sometimes I get quoted something that from a carrier and I've got extra dough on it and I know they're struggling, I'll shove it their way because guess what? The next time around when I'm struggling on a rate and I need some help from them, they'll come back to me. In this case, your loyalty is all pointed one direction towards the customer, not so much the carrier, but well, as a broker, you know, the carrier should be just as important to you, if not more important than your customers.
Well, right? Correct. And they are typically, but here's the difference. One, it was a partial, it was one skid. Secondly, I didn't set the rate. The carrier could have told me $1,800 and he would have got it. He told me $14. Why? Because he realized he can fit a bunch more freight on his truck and he's still getting $1.25 a mile to pull one skid that weighed 900 pounds. So it doesn't. Yeah,
I heard that.
I've got a question for you. Have you as a broker ever had a carrier that gives you a rate and then you just say, you know what? I'll pay you more than that.
Absolutely.
I don't.
Absolutely. Do it all the time.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, then you can plug your brokerage and you'll probably get a lot of carriers that pull for you.
Same thing.
What's that?
I've had customers that I've had for 30 years that do the same thing. Yeah. They'll be like, hey, you know what? I'm really skinny on this one. I could use some help. And then they'll come to the next one and they'll go, you know what? We hit a home run on this deal. You need a couple more nickels. Tell me what you need. Better than usual.
That's literally the same thing.
Take relationship.
Right. That's literally the same thing. That's the reason why I did this. You're basically, here's the thing. You're saying that I should have offered more money to the carrier on a partial load instead of giving the money back to the customer because it was too much money. when I already said, which is the same thing you just said, that the reason I did it is so if I ever misquote or anything, the customer is willing to remember that and then give me more money on a different load.
Okay. So my point is that you laid it all on one side. I understand that's what the carrier quoted you. I'm just saying that in that situation, I probably would split it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd probably give some back to the customer to provide that good faith with them. And I'd give some to the carrier so that they'd be in love with me forever. And put a couple more nickels in their pocket, because it's not shippers that are going dropping like hotcakes every week. It's carriers that have been for the last year and a half, right?
Right. But again,
okay.
That's all I was saying. Right. Well, I mean, thanks for calling.
I get where you're coming.
Wait, sorry. I thought you were done talking. But here's the thing. It was one pallet. If it was a full truck load and I said, hey, I'm paying $1,400, and he was trying to hassle me for money and saying, oh, it was $1,400. I need 15. No, I can only pay 14. And then I go back and give money to the customer. I get it. But if I say, hey, how much do you need to move a partial one pallet? Carrier says $1,400, which is $1.20 a mile. And then I say, sweet. And then I go to the customer and I give back the difference of the money because I didn't need it. That's called being honorable. And to be honest, my responsibility on loads and to be accountable is to customers, to assure that I keep giving business to carriers. Because if I burn my customer, then I'm not going to have any business to give to carriers. Now, paying $1,400 for one skid, here's something else you guys can keep in mind. I could have shipped to LTL for like $300. So I chose not to ship it LTL and give it to an independent guy instead. Why? Because why not? It's easier for me to do. Laz said, as for carriers dropping, the herd needs to be thin. Big time, Scotty B. The carrier side is saturated. It's the broker side. Too many equals lower rates. I kind of agree. We do have an overabundance of capacity. Do I feel bad for the companies that are going to be forced to close? Yes. And we're going to see a different tide with this COVID-19. Ryan Connor said, hang up on this guy. You're running your business, not someone else's. If the trucker don't ask for more to cover his side on him, it's not. Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what I did. And I get it. I get that kind of mindset. If I was the one that offered out a rate and it was on the lower end and I had more money in it. Yeah. I mean, Scott, you probably should just watch more shows, some more of my shows, because I'm a little bit different of a broker. You know, my job as a broker is to move freight for my customer. The customer is not, granted, I always say carrier is a customer because we got to keep them happy, but my customer is a shipper because that is who ultimately will keep the carrier happy and keep the customer happy. That is the deal, and that's how freight works. My job isn't always to cater to trucking, and to be completely frank, I did. In this regard, the guy said $1,400 on a one skid partial going from Texas to Michigan. And I said, okay, didn't haggle with him. Could I have got him to move it for like $800? Absolutely. But he said 14. I knew I had more money in it and I got it. Freight Genie on Facebook said, hey man, great reporting on the industry. What advice would be to over, I got a caller on hold. I'll pick you up in a minute. So don't hang up. You said, what would be, what advice to the over 500,000 new small brokers, small to medium-sized businesses and owner ops in the USA out here that don't have a strong book of business in this COVID pandemic? How can they survive? I have no idea, bro. I don't know. You know, this is what I was explaining to my wife earlier. Keep in mind, my wife hates talking about trucking and logistics. She doesn't understand it. She doesn't like it at all. But I was talking to her and we've actually talked quite a bit about it because it's, you know, I make the videos and you guys can clearly see I'm a little panicked about what's going to happen, what the future of logistics is going to be like. But I'm more reserved in these videos. You know, yesterday or this morning, actually, after I talked to the C-suite guy from the trucking company, the big trucking company that made cuts, I called her or I talked to her. You know, she was in the other room. And I talked to her and I was just complaining about, you know, the industry, and I'm talking about it and I'm like, you know who is going to be successful? Because hundreds and hundreds of people thousands of people are going to be laid off. A lot of those people are going to be extremely well-trained and well-prepared freight brokers, carriers, drivers. They're all going to lose their jobs because of COVID. We already know that. It's already happening. But a lot of them are going to be extremely talented. Some of them will have enough of a financial well-being to say, hey, listen, I'm going to take the tools that I learned, as long as they don't have a non-compete. The new company that is doing all the layoffs and all that stuff, the broker that I talked about before, but I'm not saying who they are, they also said, hey, we're going to change that tide. We saw this guy's reporting when he blasted TQL for enforcing the non-compete when you laid everybody off when there's a natural disaster. So this company didn't want me to go after him that way. And they said, not really. They just decided to do something honorable and say, hey, we're sorry we got to lay you off. You're not under a non-compete. Go find another job. We'll help you. That is how you know a company really cares about their employees, even in a time where they got to lay them off. That's how you know. And you guys will read it. There's going to be articles later, not one on Freight Broker Live, because I'm not going to cover it because I don't want to highlight all that stuff. But if you look at the workforce, there's going to be a tremendous amount of people that are looking for a job. So when this thing is done, hiring managers and these freight brokers and these drivers and these all these companies that are going to have to hire people they've replaced will get to pick and choose from the best of the very best. And I know it's you're probably like, what? Think about it. Look at some of the big brokers. All the big major like tech savvy brokers that are coming around right now, or that were just on the cusp of making their name. Look at these rapid growth freight brokerages, you know, that started, you know, in 2013, and then they had 50 million first year, 100 million, 200 million, 500 million. They just keep going and going and just breaking their own records tenfold. Those companies are all started by young people that I guarantee had been laid off at one point in their job. And they came back with a fire. And that's one of the reasons why I think I'm pretty successful in this. It's why Freight Broker Live has dramatically increased when I left the other company back in January. Because I had a renewed fire. I saw how to do things and I said, I'm going to do it. That's what all these people in the workforce, and it's going to help some of these companies excel, because they're going to be able to pick and choose and say, listen, this guy, awesome. Knows what he's doing, has experience. He could start making me money from day one with very minimal training. So there's going to be a lot of those people. But here's another thing. A lot of those people, too, are going to go out and say, screw it. I'm never going to work for another company and get laid off if there is ever a national disaster again. So what I'm going to do instead is just start my own thing. I've already got my customers because they let me go without a non-compete. I've already got my list of customers, or even better, I don't even need a list of customers. Why don't I need a list of customers? Because all these customers that are out here haven't shipped for anybody in a month. All these non-essential freight goods. So everything in their need to get shit moved, excuse the language, is going to be renewed. And so if you catch and you have a good freight brokerage business that's set up and ready, the day these companies start mass producing again is the day that you get on the phone with them and you start saying, hey, listen, we had some serious challenges in the past month. I know you're used to working with broker A over here, but let me show you a way a tech-enabled broker, whatever selling point you have, can really streamline your processes so this never happens again. There's all different ways that you could turn this into a massive selling point when freight finally picks up. I'm just worried about that time period from now to then and what the hell it's going to do to the industry. All right, we have a caller. Let me pick this guy up. What's up? You're on the air.
Hey, Steve, it's Nate.
What's up, buddy?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, bud. Glad you're keeping the positivity going. I like that. This guy's not falling over there. And what you were just talking about is exactly what was going through my head and what I wanted to call in about. The thing I was thinking about is, do you think that now is the time to reevaluate the broker, shipper, and broker carrier relationship model using the palette that you were talking about, where you quote your customer price and you got it for a lower price? At that point, would it maybe make sense to do the model as a cost plus model, where you are very honest with the shippers and you tell them all the time from now on, hey, listen, we booked it at this, we charge a standard 10, 15, 20, whatever the margin the business wants to add on, as a way to add that clarity to the relationship. But also, this is maybe the time where business models have to change in order to survive.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people,
especially for
a lot of brokers already do that. The cost plus. I mean, that's technically what I do as a volume broker. All my customers know exactly how much I'm paying the driver. And if they ever ask, I'll tell them, because I'm not greedy. I'm a volume guy. Like my big customer that I move all the loads for, he knows that I'm making $50 for every load that's under $1,000, $100 for every load that's over. He knows because I've worked with him for years. If you're talking about having the entire system switch that way, it won't work because people are still set. If people used it, like if a broker, like let's say a big major broker decided to do that and already had a customer basis and said, listen, this is the way we're going to do this from now on to provide open transparency on every transaction. Yeah, then it could possibly be caught up. But then nobody really wants their customers to see how much they make. I'm a little bit different because I base volume more than profit, where a big company like a big three-letter brokerage isn't going to want their customer to know that they paid $1,000 but billed the customer $3,000. They're not going to want the customer to know that. So a cost-plus scenario doesn't work for a broker like that who's already making more by not being transparent. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for the three-letter brokerages, they can continue that model if they want. But for the other people still coming into the game or coming back from unemployment, that might be the thing that saves them.
Yeah,
I mean this is where we could see a revolution.
100%, you'll be able to negotiate more business. Like if, the right load guy, if he opened up his platform to brokers and he already has it to shippers, that's essentially a cost-plus program. But if you opened it up to brokers or was a little bit more aggressive on his shipping on that side, he's already got the platform to do it. It's all about just getting your name out there. If you had a big broker, I'm not even going to say who any of these brokers are, but if you had a big broker that was already in existence and they saw that they wanted to be competitive, they already had a good lock on their customers. So they knew their customers weren't going to flinch when they say, hey, we're making 15% profit on this load. If they knew the customer wasn't going to flinch, that is one way to really change it. And I think some big brokers already do that. I think that's part of the selling point for some of these brokers. But it's will it ever become mainstream? No. Is it a way for a small broker to go after small shippers and control that business? Yeah. But it also provides, look at it from a sales standpoint. If I'm going after a customer that I know he is on a cost plus 10%, and I'm just going to say, well, shit, I'll do it for cost plus 8 points. You know what I mean? And then I already undercut the broker, and then we're going to be working for lower and lower margins because it's always going to be transparency. So everyone is going to know what the transaction costs. Now, is that great for carrier relationships, carrier broker relationships? Absolutely. But the fact is it will essentially eliminate competition, meaning that you guys will compete against each other forever until no one has a job anymore because companies can't profit on like 0.5%. And that's what would happen. Because me as a salesperson, if I know, I already do it. If I have a broker that I know is charging 8% or $100 and I'm going to go to that it's called undercutting. It's the same thing carriers do sometimes. If broker from Trinity is paying $1,000 and a broker from, a three-letter broker just paying $900, you're going to go with the one that pays them more. It's kind of just in reverse. Imagine if you were bidding on what the truck cost. I've heard that too, where people want to bid on like actual truck pricing and say, listen, let's reverse it, where you bid on what the truck, the lane value for the truck is. And so imagine like a DAT load board and instead of the DAT load board being the DAT load board, where loads were posted, only trucks were posted, and they had their posted rate for them to take go in a lane. That's kind of interesting, but then again, it would never work because people would be too competitive and you'd compete against each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, though,
that
bud.
That was just one example of a change in the business model. There's other possibilities out there. But all I'm saying
anything right now, because I think...
changing that model.
Yeah, I think any choice that anybody does right now will do very well. If you come out of the gate swinging, so when this freight, whatever the hell it is, cliff, lake, mountain, whatever, when this thing is done and freight starts to come back and manufacturing starts to pick up again and trucking becomes, more normal, then if you have a broker that comes out and says, listen, we're going to start and we're going to do things with this amount of vengeance, in this, and yeah, you would be able to get customers and retain them, but just as everyone said, you know, it wouldn't unless you have a lock on the shipper, meaning you lock them into like a 5-year contract and do the cost plus plan that way, which wouldn't work at anyway, because who knows what the hell is going to happen freight wise. There's no way to stop that shipper from going with someone that comes in and says, well, I'll do it for $80 a shipment or 8% or something. But thanks for calling in, buddy. Yeah. How are you holding up there in Chi-Town?
Chi-Town's good. Sun's shining. Trucks are parked. Insurance is down to 12-mile radius.
Just trying to keep the cost low.
The gas station and the parking lot.
There you go.
Parked. It's parked for now.
Gotcha. All right, buddy. Thanks for calling in.
Sure. Take care. Bye.
All right. Yeah, I mean, that's a thing for any brokers that are watching this later. Or watching this now, or I shared out to a bunch of LinkedIn groups and stuff like that. We do have a little bit of advantage now. Like all these guys that are coming out and are forced to lay off people and all that stuff. We do have a little bit of an advantage coming into the industry because you essentially start fresh. Like all those leads and all those sales leads that you have in your Rolodex or your CRM or whatever you want to call it. Those leads are going to be a little bit more apt to say, listen, we will switch, or we will entertain switching to a different broker or a different customer or a different carrier. And the reason they're a little bit more willing to do it is because they haven't worked with the people in how long. And it only works with non-essential. But then again, it all depends. Like I always thought, just like I thought with my dispatch company, I thought that, hey, I'll just make a flat rate system and, you know, pay $20 per load and that'll work. And then doesn't work. And then I'm like, let's build it off a tipping system. And that kind of mentality is great. And it's a really good idea. And it just, for some reason, it doesn't work. You know, the cost plus, unless you have them locked in a contract, it certainly doesn't work because anyone can undercut your cost. Mr. Lampshade said the tech companies that connect shippers with carriers are the middlemen. Yeah, I mean, they are. That's one of the reasons why I'm so excited about the DAT book now functionality. I really think that's going to be a game changer. And I think it is the way of the future for freight brokers. And if we have a system where it eliminates some of that communication between a carrier and a broker, carriers are more apt to like it because they don't need to deal with some of the brokers that they hate, you know, and especially with the shipping and the tracking and all the automation that's in the industry. I think it's pretty cool. So I'm excited to see, like I said, I'm going to start doing that on Monday. So you guys will know probably Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, if I think it's good or if I'm not covering as much freight as I usually do and all that stuff. We got a couple of comments here. Let me try to read through them. We got a lot. Golden T Logistics on YouTube said Savannah shut down. Some of the truck drivers got laid off today. Yeah. I mean, it's happening all over the place. Like I said, I know that there's cuts. There's a big broker laying off people. It's inevitable and it's going to continuously happen. Like I said yesterday in the job reports that was released by the Bureau of Labor yesterday, Pennsylvania's biggest industry segment that was cut was transportation and warehousing. So we are going, you know, the trucking industry in general, because again, I don't consider trucking just trucks. I consider trucking, brokering, you know, factoring, everything that's involved in trucking. Trucks are the foundation, but everything that's involved is trucking to me. It's kind of like logistics, but logistics has too many other sides. Trucking is trucking. But yeah, there's layoffs across the board. Factoring companies are laying people off because they know there's not going to be as many people looking to get into the industry in the near future. Although Carrier 411 reports otherwise because people are still filing for their numbers. Is it a good time to go buy a truck? I have no idea. You know, I'm still looking. I'm still entertaining that play. But who knows? I mean, I may get a job offer to go be some VP of sales for a company or an agent director or something. And, you know, I'm open to doing anything. You know, as you guys know, I left and stopped doing Freight Broker Live and went and worked somewhere else for a little bit. And then that didn't work. And I came back here and then I was talking to the other guy about being a VP of operations for his tech company. And there's all sorts of decisions and stuff. And I want to just, here's my thing for me personally and professionally, what I want to do in the long run is teach. I want to teach people in college how to navigate this industry the right way. You can get a degree in supply chain and logistics, but you can't get a degree in trucking. And I want to teach people about trucking. I want to teach people about being a broker and how to do the job the right way, or as I think the right way. And so the only way for that's the long term goal, years down the road. You know, that's one of the reasons I'm going back to school and doing all that, because I want to do that. But in the short term, I want to be a part of a company that can change and innovate the industry, whether it's through media, like, you know, that was my previous quest, or with a tech company that's looking to evolve something, or just me just saying, screw it. No one else is doing what I want. So I'm going to just create Freight Broker Live and just have that be a big thing. And just so people learn and it something that I do is beneficial to the industry. That's my goal in the long run. I think that's what everybody should really hope for, is that no matter what segment you are, if you find yourself laid off right now, take a good hard look and say, okay, listen, this is what I loved about the industry, but I want to try and do this when I come back to it. So when this thing is all done and all these freight brokers are now busy because manufacturing's opened up, if you were a freight broker that was laid off, you now have the pick of the litter of the companies that are there. If you're open to moving, you have an even bigger pick. And you can sit there and say, listen, I'm going to go work for this company. Why? Because I just get that feeling. You know, me as a sales trainer and as a VP of sales and stuff, I could tell. And most of you HR guys, if you're probably not watching this, but most HR people and executive staff and all that stuff, you guys know when you're talking to someone, you know if they have it, and there's going to be, the market is going to be flooded with that type of salesperson that can go out and sell you a pen when you got, you know, a cup full of them. You know, there's people like that just have that gift. I'm not really one of them, because I don't do well doing phone conversations, but I can sell someone a pen, or I could sell someone a computer while they're emailing. You know, I've always just been good getting that connection and training people how to do things the right way. But it's going to be who knows? We just got to make it through the short term. We had a lot of comments here. Jer Helm said, what's the opinion on the rates? Do you think rates will hit record highs? No, I don't think they're going to hit record highs. I think they're going to come. They'll be high eventually. Right now they're going down, and they're going to go down. They're going to go so down that I'm going to be able to cover a lot of freight, because I already have cheap freight anyway. And it's not like I can't go back and try to get more money. It's partials. I'm able to move it. Why am I going to go back and get it? Do I have to deal with the obnoxious carrier who flips out because I'm only paying $500 on 400 miles? Yes, but it's a partial load. It's not a full truck, so they can go after themselves. That's my opinion. But rates are going to go down. So I think I'm going to be able to cover a lot of those loads, a lot more, because carriers are going to be a little bit more desperate. Doesn't mean that I'm going to make any more money, because my customer is not going to make any more money. He ships them for cheap. The customer is not making a bunch of money either by shipping it for cheap, because he manufactures the product. You see, you know, he makes some points, I'm guessing, on the freight spend, just as I do, just as the carrier does. That's why they're hauling the load. But I think rates are going to go down, and then they're going to come up, and then they're going to level out. And where it levels out, who knows? I don't know. It all depends. And that's why I was curious about like RFPs and stuff like that. What happens then to those? Because if those rates are changed too, so they, I think right now people have a lot of control over what the spot market's going to look like in another 3 or 4 months, because it all depends on what it costs to get a truck. When this thing is done, how much is it going to cost to get a load picked up from North Carolina and brought to California? If every carrier that's out there gets together and says, hey, listen, let's choose this as a time, where brokers do it too, and choose this as a time where we're going to stand up and say, listen, that $1.10 a mile crap that you used to do doesn't work. We need a minimum of $1.40 or whatever. That's what's going to set the rates. Or shippers, when you go, inflate your rate because you were down for 3 months. That's what's going to happen too. Cost of goods sold, my guess, and I don't really know, but I think because a lot like that, the video that I showed before, and I'm going to show again in a minute, like that video said, you know, they have to close. They're sitting on their surplus. And that yet they're still paying their employees and paying for the real estate and paying for all this stuff while they go. So when they pump up again, the cost of goods sold, you would think, would go up a little bit so they could recoup some of their losses. Who knows? I don't know. That's a question for some big economist. But Mr. Lampshade said, for example, if an owner ops would get many Walmart loads, only megas. I don't know what the hell that question is. I moved it. Mr. Lampshade said, I think your show, Ted Keys and Trucker's Coach videos, are the best for me on YouTube. That's cool. I like Ted Keys and I like Trucker's Coach as well. Truckers Coach is good. He knows a lot about leasing, not as much about brokering, but that's why I've got on there a couple of times and talked about it. I really like it. TC Boggs on YouTube said spot market is basically the overflow from contract freight, cannot handle irregular loads. These spot market loads will be click and go. Yeah. All right. Well, we have a caller and then I'm going to end this because there's a lady named Cassandra Gaines who is hosting Jim Mullen, the FMCSA acting administrator. And she's, I don't even know how she got him on the phone, but she is doing an interview with him on LinkedIn and I really want to see it. And so I'm going to end this here shortly, but we have a caller. I'll take this quick and then we'll go. What's up, buddy? You're on the air.
What's up, buddy? This is Thomas from Houston. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How you doing?
All right. I just want to put this out, and this is from a couple brokers.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to let y'all tell the rest. The only reason why rates are so low, and you said it too, is because carriers are hauling for cheap.
Right.
And the broker told me straight up, he said, I don't know why these carriers out here hauling stuff for so cheap. They should get some kind of hazardous pay or something.
Oh, you mean
he
right
said,
now?
I can't tell you why, Thomas.
Yeah.
Broker told me that. He said, I don't know why carriers are hauling stuff for so cheap. They should get some kind of hazardous pay or something. Thomas, I can't tell you why. This was the broker told me. I'm like, I'm in agreement with you. I'm running around my house. I'm not going nowhere.
Right. Yeah, it's...
Go ahead.
Oh. Well, thanks for calling in. I'm going to hang up now, and then I'll answer your question. I have no idea. I don't know why it carries. I've been saying that before this whole COVID-19 crap started, you know, towards the end of last year. Why carriers are the ones who dictate the rate. As much as everyone thinks brokers do, brokers don't make the rates. We suggest a rate and the carrier either takes it or denies it. If the carrier denies it, then guess what we have to do as brokers? We have to offer more money or we're not going to get the freight moved. So ultimately, if a carrier takes a cheap load, then we are going to have to move, that's what it moves for. It can't, you know, the blame can't always be with the broker. That's why I laugh. But hold on. I've got one more call and then I'm out. Like I said, the show's going to end because I want to see Cassandra Gaines' interview with Jim Mullen. I think that'll be a good one. All right. Oh, yeah. And they hung up. All right. So let me play this video again. Actually, I'm not going to. Guys, make sure you check out freightbrokerlive.com. It is a very good resource for all things freight. I try to be as honest as I possibly can at everything. If you guys want a one-on-one consulting appearance or anything, you just want to shoot the shit and you want to pay me for it, go on to the consulting side. I'll help you set up a truck company. You want to do whatever. It's hour-long blocks, $50 an hour. I discounted it like crazy because most of you guys already know I charge $150 an hour for consulting. But do that. It helps me pay for all the stuff that I do, all the new audio equipment that I should have, hopefully, by the end of next week. They said the 20th, but who knows? See you later. Have fun. Let me find the music and then end this sucker.